EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Murder 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you all are enjoying your week. I'm Nick Hunter, and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. We are joined by Matthew from the state of Texas tonight, and at 13 years old, he witnessed a sphere that was made of plasma, close enough to make out its features. And this encounter Matthew had compelled him to seek an explanation using theoretical physics. Matthew is up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Matthew. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You're more than welcome. It's great to have you join us today. And you're calling from the Lone Star State of Texas.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Born and raised.
Born and raised. The state where everything's bigger.
Yes, sir. Including all of my experiences growing up here and moving off to different parts of the country. I would say that all the snakes and spiders and insects are bigger in Texas at the very least.
Wonderful. Now, Matthew, your experience occurred in 1992. Would you like to start at the beginning, please?
Yes, sir. I believe that I was 13 or 14 at the time. I know it was during the summer because I wasn't in school and I was up late talking to a girlfriend at the time. And the first thing that I could really take note about the whole night was that it was like an electrical storm was brewing, but not quite happening. There were low-lying clouds like fog almost, but above where fog usually rests on the ground is about 40 feet up in the air and just like a solid layer of moving clouds. I guess from experience, like in Texas with electrical storms, I had been told in the past to get off the phone back in the day before we had cell phones. So all the phones were connected to wires, to the wall, to our ears. And so I was just out of an air of caution. I decided that I would get off the phone because it looked like the weather might get bad. Mind you, there's no rain, there's no thunder. It just kind of looks spooky outside. I got off the phone. I remember kind of pacing around my room for a second, and I looked out my window, and pretty much in the center of my perspective looking out of the window, I saw this green ball of light rise up off the horizon to right underneath the cloud line that was passing and stopped. When it stopped perfectly. There was no stabilization. And I guess this was the moment like that my stomach kind of started twisting and I felt really uncomfortable looking at what I was looking at. As soon as the thing stopped, it started flashing violently. It's the only way I can describe it. It flashed quicker than anything I've ever seen in my life. It went from deep blue to deep red and hit every color in the visible spectrum in between that, just lightning pace. It landed on green again. Like it stopped on green. This all took maybe 6 seconds or so. When it landed on green, I stared at it for another couple of seconds, and then something happened and it like blipped out. I could tell you that something in that split second where it just disappeared right in front of my eyes, that there's missing information there that I didn't perceive, like it moved instead of just disappearing. But it for all intents and purposes, it looks like it just disappears. I literally ran into my mom's room shrieking about the end of the world and the apocalypse. I'm like, Mom, it's the horseman. I just saw the horseman of the apocalypse. It's the end of the world sometime. I don't remember. I had a pretty good imagination, but like I knew what I had seen I should not have seen. My mom told me, well, why don't you call the police? So I did. I called the police. I was like a kid, and I don't know exactly what I was yammering over the phone, but it was something to the nature of, you know, y'all need to come check this out. I just saw something out here. It definitely wasn't right. You know, the dispatcher is basically, you know, listening to my entire story. And then she takes a breath and she's like, you know, there's a lot of transformer explosions whenever there's electrical activity. It sounds like you might have seen a transformer explode. Well, I'm a kid. I don't know much about plasma science or electricity, so I took her word for it. Cool. I was still freaked out and still kind of questioning like what I had seen. So I called my girlfriend back and I start telling her. I'm like, yo, she lived about a mile and a half away from me. And while I'm talking to her, I'm like explaining what I saw. And she's like, well, what did it look like? And then all of a sudden, all the clouds, all those low-lying clouds turned green again. I didn't see the object, but the sky was green. And I told her, I'm like, hey, look out your window right now. What do you see? I didn't tell her what to look for. I just told her, you know, look out. What do you see? And her response to me was, oh, my God, why is the sky green? This was the only verification, I guess, that I received. And at least I knew in my own mind that part of the experience like had actually happened, that someone else was verifying there's green light in the sky. Cool. I kind of cataloged it in the back of my mind to be something that was just unexplainable. There are plenty of unexplainable things in the world. There's mysteries everywhere. No big deal. And notably, I also didn't believe in flying saucers. Like if I would see pictures of flying saucers or hear people talk about them, like that is pretty hokey. That doesn't seem real. And it seemed completely removed from the thing I saw. I thought it was either ball lightning or if it were some type of, you know, non-human intelligence, that basically their UFOs looked completely different than, you know, this flying saucer crap that I've been fed. So flash forward, and I guess there's something to be said for the amount of mistrust that it really did kind of foster against the government and against people in positions of authority who are telling me things are a certain way. I started to recognize that if I had seen ball lightning, that even that, there was no physical scientific mechanism for ball lightning. That ball lightning was still a mystery. That, you know, as much as we've done with the standard model and with chemistry, and, you know, we have a lot of science mapped out, but this phenomenon that had been reported for hundreds of years at least had no mechanism. We do not understand how ball lightning could exist. So it kind of put me in a position where when I'd hear people talk about UFOs from a particular perspective, I would think, you know, okay, yeah, sure, there's not any really good footage of UFOs, but there's still not any good footage of this thing I saw, which I presume was still ball lightning. And you know, you'd think that scientists would have gotten to the bottom of it. Say, okay, well, this is not a UFO. This is an actual phenomenon. Let's get some footage of it. Let's, you know, put it under some EM measuring devices and figure out exactly what's going on. Well, we haven't done that. So I start kind of wondering about the other things that, you know, flying saucers. Okay, we don't have any good pictures of them. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. When all of the Tic Tac stuff started happening, I guess not that I was like in any privy circles at the time, but I started kind of hearing about the Nimitz thing back around 2012. And there were no videos of it. It was just like people who I guess had been on the aircraft carrier who were talking, you know, and rumors are getting out. And then I start hearing that the government is interested in these things, that, you know, despite everything I had been told about it just being a hoax, that, you know, the most powerful government in the world is investing money into this. It's like, okay, something might be to it. I really did kind of an inward quest and then started trying to understand what I could about just fundamental physics to create a mechanism for ball lightning. Because in my mind, like if I could prove that, you know, nature could create this thing that I saw, you know, that would be it. That I could dismiss any more conspiratorial ideas pretty easily if we could say, okay, this is how ball lightning is created. It happens to be a, you know, ball of plasma that looks like this. This is how it can behave. Specifically the way that this object rose off the horizon and then just stopped right underneath the clouds made me think, like, it looks like the way magnets interact with superconductors. It's not any different, you know, so far as the stabilization or the lack thereof. And so in my mind, whatever that object was, it was either exploiting natural processes or it just was a natural process. The actual details that I think matter here that I've struggled, honestly, I just wanted this information to get out to a scientist who was interested, who knew what they were looking for, because the color of light is significant. Why would it be green under certain circumstances? Why did it flash? Why is it only flashing in the visible spectrum? There's all kinds of light, you know, outside of the visible spectrum. Why was this thing purely flashing between the visible spectrum? It just, it seemed like something worthy of scientific exploration. And I thought, you know, again, just assuming that all of this is a natural process, this would be the coolest firework I'd ever seen. Like if someone pulled out one of these things for their grand finale at a fireworks show, it's game over for everyone else who's ever made a firework. If thing looked like CGI, I would imagine that it was about 400 feet away or so. If I were to hold a quarter about a foot away from my face, that was the size of it. Like, apparently to me, I have no idea how actually big it was, but the light from it lit up all the clouds. It caused shadows in my room. And I remember, like, the green light, these green photons that are coming from this object are in my room hitting me. So, like, it's interacting with me, and I can't help, I guess I can't help from a bird's eye view to wonder how much of it really seemed manicured for my perception. I don't like to think of things that way. I guess just the chances of seeing something like that to begin with seem so astronomical. Its placement in my window seemed astronomical, like it was centered almost, right? All those things I can buy is just being coincidental. Like, I, you know, when it comes down to it, I had this experience which has guided a lot of my life decisions and my life path, and, you know, made me, I guess, skeptical of particular things in life that not everyone's skeptical of. I think that the science here is the only part that's important. Like, if we were being visited by a non-human intelligence, like, I can accept that. I think that's definitely paradigm shifting, but I'm kind of already under the impression we're not alone in the universe. That's not that big a deal. If they have technology, though, that can manipulate time or manipulate space, like, that is important. Just the understanding of any of the processes that lead to that science could build us a better MRI or, you know, things that we haven't imagined yet. So my interest has always been the science. This thing looked like I never saw a solid shape in it. It was like a, it looked like a star, like just a ball of plasma. The reason that I think that it was spherical and not like a flat surface, circular surface aimed towards me is because the center seemed magnified. Like, the whole thing, as it rose from the ground, it seemed like the outside was this bright corona of green plasma. And it was like electric, like so bright. The center of this mass, the closer you got to the center, it got dark green, like a strange dark shade of green that I could almost swear to you seemed to move depending on how my head swayed. Like, it's real hard to describe. If you had a magnifying glass and you put it on beam of light hitting a table, it's kind of like what you'd see. It just looked like light that was being magnified. The flashing, when it started flashing, I still to this day have never seen anything flash that fast, albeit from a few YouTube videos here and there. You know, there's quite a few resources out there now of people who are just archiving other people's footage. And not that there's nothing out there that's, you know, magnificent footage, but I still haven't seen the thing that I saw growing up. I've seen things that are similar. I've seen balls of light that seem to be flashing in that same kind of pace, extremely fast pace. And I wonder, like, because a lot of the reports that I've taken notice to have been about bright yellow, orange orbs, I wonder if maybe this is the result of flashing back and forth between the red and the blue on the visible spectrum, and just the intensity of that back and forth would create a net output of yellow, like, which is kind of in the center between red and blue on the visible spectrum. I think that this entire subject is being basically hidden from us because it is accessible. There's something that, you know, I've heard Jeremy Corbell say a couple of times, like, you know, this technology is 10,000, possibly 100,000 years in the future. I don't think that's the case. I believe that that's, in fact, the exact reason that we're not being shared footage that would scare us, because I know they have it. But it's because just watching the behavior of these objects can lead us to very accessible terrestrial science. And I think that's what they're more or less trying to keep from people, is that watching the way these things move, watching things that make physicists say something's not right here, they're all clues. It's clues to how you would attain science like that. And I guess at the bottom of it, that this is what's bothering me about the whole scenario, is that I have a good idea of some of the footage that they have that they're not releasing. And there's only so many reasons that they can cite for not sharing it with people. I think on the top of that would be not wanting homegrown terrorists or, you know, other adversaries to come up with it first. But if everyone in the world has that attitude, then, you know, it's basically like we're stockpiling for another giant Cold War. And the science here is all that really matters. Like, I do believe that we have long since probably figured out what they're using as weapons. It's not too much of a stretch from any type of destructive wave use. I don't think that we're at a point where we can say safe for everyone to just have access to all of the information that's out there. But I base that on my family's reactions to these things, you know. And I'll mention it. My couple of years ago, when all this stuff got into the news, I asked my aunt, who's she's aging and she's very fundamental Christian, whatever. And I said, "What do you think of all this stuff in the news, man? You know, you hear about the Navy saying the UFOs exist." And she put her drink down and she said, "You know, Matthew, I'll tell you, if those things are real, they're imps from the devil." And that was all she said about it. And she was 100% serious. She would rather believe that this is it's like a religious war, and that if aliens are real, those are the demons. I believe in a God. But I don't believe in like a physical guy in the sky. It's like more like a source, you know, like a source of all the information that created life and reality. That seems to be a thing. And no matter, you know, who or what kind of creature you are, that thing would still basically have reverence over existence. So, you know, I don't have any problems like saying that God exists and aliens exist. There's no big issues with that. But I see how especially the older generations seem to run with this whim that it's like a holy war end times, like you got to be on the side of, you know, God. It just seems real odd to me that at this point we're in a battle that everyone can agree this is something that we need to put attention on. This is something we need to get to the bottom of. And yet we still find other things that are of non-importance to fight and bicker over. I hope that within my lifetime, we're going to see a big change. But I guess I would want our government to know that we're aware of being lied to, and it doesn't really help any of the other areas of authority to lie to people. So I would like to get to the bottom of the science. I would like to see scientists actually curious about this, and not from the public's perspective, where we're being shown these small clips of nothing extraordinary, but for them to be well informed, be given the actual information so that they can move forward with some theories that might put us forward on everything else. You know, our standard model, our understanding of gravity, our understanding of quantum mechanics. It seems real odd to me that we're basically in a conundrum with our understanding of all those subjects, and we have these objects moving around the sky that seem to behave like quantum objects do, seem to observe some of the same rules that we see observed on quantum systems. You know, that's, again, just to kind of bring it home, that's why I think this science is accessible and why we're not being given even any evidence of the five observables in anything officially released to DOD. Like the thing they did in the hearing where they spent 4 minutes to go over a clip that they knew damn well only had two frames of a blurry object in it, when we all know that they have extravagant footage that people are going to, you know, make the claim that it's CGI when it's released, and we know better. So I don't appreciate the patronizing that they're doing to the public. Like, even after the cat's out of the bag, like, we all know there's something there to investigate. And lo and behold, this thing that I saw as a kid that I reserved to be probably atmospheric anomalies, they're not even showing footage of that. And that seems to me, that would be the perfect thing to show people. Like, look, this thing looks really scary. Look at it. It's a ball of plasma. Looks really scary. Lights up the whole sky. But it's nothing to worry about. It's just ball lightning. It's been around forever. It's explainable. We know what it is. But noticeably, that's not what's happening. So I think that all of the secrecy is surrounding the idea that this technology is so far advanced, we don't have any clue, you know, how to do it or what it's about. I don't buy that at all. I see videos of things stopping in midair against the wind or taking off at breakneck speeds without any stabilization. That's evidence. I can see it. So I guess I just want the details.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
The resources that I've found the most compelling recently are just some of the random YouTube archives. The Only Real UFOs does a good job of just kind of, you know, orbs in the sky, things that fly at strange speeds, whatever. Eyes on Cinema has recently started releasing an archive of older UFO witnesses. And I find those to be some of the most compelling because people's sincerity seemed way more readable in the 60s and 70s. Like, you could see little twinges of madness, but like, it was from a sincere reaction. I guess now it just seems way harder, especially with people who are trained in misinformation. I would assume that we're in a place where we were past all that. I don't know how they would assume that the details that can't be kept aren't going to lead the public to the understanding that the government's keeping from people. It makes any sense.
Well, we are the little people, you know. I wouldn't expect any revelations coming out of the government or coming out of the hearings.
For sure. And I guess it's not that I expected them to, you know, just come out with it, but watching my authorities, my leaders telling me that they don't know about the Rendlesham Forest, they don't know about, you know, particular events that they want to spend time in an open hearing, like fast forwarding and trying to freeze frame something that they just know better. They know better than to think that this really is going to sum it up for people. Like, I understand the exercise they were trying to do by putting everyone through that, and there's something to be said for it, but the thing to be said for it is that these objects are very, very likely manipulating time somehow. Like, there's, you can say what you want about, you know, something that moves from a standstill to Mach 5 and how it would, you know, it'd splatter anyone in there. Well, if they're technically moving at normal speeds, but time is moving different, then that would explain why they're not splattered and why we observe them to move in this strange way. And, you know, if you kind of look at some of the fundamentals of the mysterious physics, the part of physics that we don't have a good grasp on, like, we understand that heavy mass, high mass equals, you know, gravity, and that gravity, higher gravity, generally means that time is also being dilated. So if these things are capable of manipulating mass, then it would explain, like, some of these metal exhausts that keep, you know, being reported. I could see a mode of transportation that involves acquiring and exhausting heavy mass in order to manipulate time and gravity. Instead of a propulsion where you're pushing yourself along, it's like you're pulling yourself towards fields. And then that would also explain some of the strange movement that we see, where some of these things appear to wobble, some of these things appear to surf. And I think that it's more likely that the perfect vehicle in the universe would be made of something that allows you to ride the natural currents of the universe, as opposed to pushing yourself through it and, you know, all the energy expended from getting from point A to point B using chemical combustion. It's probably the least efficient way to get somewhere. And I think that we have the wrong idea when we say that, you know, a UFO is a little craft with someone piloting it. It's got a pilot stick, and they go, you know, they point it this way, they go that way. I don't think that's what's going on. And I'm not even certain that the Tic Tacs are shaped like a Tic Tac. I've been trying to get some details from that whole experience, because I've seen where in some of the detailed animations, they have these strange little, like, rudders on the bottom of the Tic Tac. I don't know if that's an animator having a creative liberty, or if that's something, a detail that was actually, you know, in the original experience that they just, I haven't seen any of the witnesses describe, but it's an important detail, because if it wasn't there, if this thing is literally just a solid fuselage, like, you know, a solid tic-tac looking object, then in my mind and in theory, it could be just a ball, just like a spear that is moving back and forth really fast. And because it moves so quickly, we would just perceive it as a, you know, as a different shape. I think that that's a lot of what's going on with these sightings, is that we're seeing something that looks like magic because it's using elements of science that are still mysterious to us. You know, it's not magic. And I have to think that the mechanisms are accessible. It's not something like, you have to think like, how much brain power does it take to problem solve any particular issue? And if you had in front of you, if someone said, okay, here's this object, this is how it behaves, figure out how it behaves that way, I can't imagine any problem that would take 10,000 years or 100,000 years to solve if you have all the clues and all the everything you need to start extrapolating or coming up with, you know, ideas. And I think a lot of this is just going to be taking ideas that we're familiar with out of context and putting it in new context and saying, well, does that work? The fact that there are so many different shapes to these objects and that they're not even willing to share that with the public is another kind of red flag to me. It's like, maybe there's something to the shapes relationships to each other. Maybe it is all the same craft or same group of craft. And we kind of get an idea of what kind of science it could be using just by looking at the spectrum of shape. So whether or not this is something that we need the government's help to figure out, I don't believe that. I think that like the public is going to know the truth. This is a part of nature, one way or the other. And it's not, you know, no government can contain nature. So they're going to have to do better damage control than what they're doing to avoid the situation where no one wants to listen to anything they have to say because, you know, you lied about things that could have given us better medicine for 40 years. So I would tell people to be vigilant in trying to understand it, because I think it's accessible. I think that it's the type of thing that with the right group of understandings and a little bit of resource that we could change the whole scenario overnight, especially with resources like the internet, where an idea can no longer be contained just because, you know, someone feels that it's in the best interest of national security or whatever to remove it. And I'll mention that I do take note to the types of videos that are removed from YouTube and Twitter, because it always seems to be balls of plasma, strange cubes, and actual motion of these objects, like these things either stopping or accelerating from nothing. Those are the videos that get removed. And then, you know, I can't prove this person or that person or organization is what's removing them, but I see, because I've started to take notice enough to, you know, if I see something that I have an idea is going to get removed, I go ahead and screenshot it or screen record it, and I go back and check on it in a few days, and sure enough, the types of things that I've developed an intuition that, okay, this is something that they don't want people to see, those are indeed the things that are getting removed. So it's more about the behavior of these things, not just their existence. It's like the details in the way they act is information. And I think that they're probably more worried about their adversaries having an upper hand than they are us figuring it out. But us figuring it out before they're willing to acknowledge it is going to be a much bigger disaster than their adversaries having a leg up, because, you know, no one's going to pull this technology out until they're, you know, they feel like it's the existential threat of, you know, all human history. So it'll be too late. I really feel like the best route through this is just to start trying to absorb the science that can be absorbed, processes that we witness that we know could relate to this particular molecular process or this particular electromagnetic process. Like, I think that all of those things are very accessible. And the part that they're keeping from us is probably has nothing to do with that.
I say you're absolutely right. You know, it's, excuse the pun, but it's the details that is important that will shed light on, you know, more of the answers on the subject. You know, they are 100% keeping stuff from us. They always have done, and it's always for their own benefit, not us people, you know. It never is. So I'd never expect any information to really come out that's going to benefit us anytime soon. I just don't think it'll happen. I was cynical before all the hearings, and when all this, you know, all this information was coming out, I knew how it would end, and that's exactly how it has done. Unfortunately, you know, I'd rather it wasn't like that. I'm not necessarily one to trust my government or your government. You know, to be honest with you, they're never really there for our benefit.
Right. Well, let me ask this, because I'm, you know, I was raised on a certain, you know, these are the fundamentals of our ethics and our morals here in this country and this and that. And I liked to believe that growing up. At a certain point, like my feelings about country and, you know, camaraderie and loyalty. And honestly, look, it's probably all ruined by the football team, the Houston Oilers. Because when I was growing up, they were my football team. And then at some point when I was a teenager, they just up and moved. I think they were the first football team to do that. They just said, you know what? We're not the Houston Oilers anymore. We're like the Tennessee Oilers. I don't even remember where they moved. And from that day forward, I just didn't care about football. Didn't care about like, oh, home team, screw those guys. But, you know, I still reserve the idea that the government is an extension of us. There's not a whole lot that they can do without us. So if we say, look, you know, here's a solution, here's a better way to think about this, and we present them with a solution, the thing that should happen, which is, you know, everyone on every aisle of the fence gets together and says, okay, maybe this is something we should all consider. It's attacked literally from both angles now. And I guess when I was growing up, I had this idea that there was conventional science and then there was fringe science. And fringe science wasn't allowed in because of all the woo-woo and horseshit. But that's how science is developed, is by people on the very exterior of it coming up with some wacky ideas and saying, prove me wrong. I'm seeing less of that. I'm seeing where the truly fringe is something that has deviated so far from reasonable science that, like, you know, things like flat earth exist now. People actually argue over something that you can mathematically prove if you have a telescope and look at Venus for a year. You know, that there's people out there who take this aversion to science to the extreme. And I think that because of that, it's put all the legacy scientists and the people who are doing real conventional but good science, it puts them in a position to attack the fringe even more. And I feel myself, I have always felt myself on that fringe of, okay, but what is ball lightning? Like, just tell me how ball lightning happens. Tell me how plasma nucleates by itself, stays self-contained in an exact mass, and emits light, goes through some type of energetic process. Like, there's no mechanism for that. There's no photos of it on the internet. I've reached out to a couple of filmmakers about a place in Texas called Marfa, where there's a phenomenon, pretty dependable phenomenon, known as the Marfa Lights. Happens off the main highway that runs through there. I was taken out there maybe about 5 years, 6 years ago, and we were just passing by about 9 o'clock, and the lady we're with, she's like, "Well, you know, this mark of life, they usually come out right about now. You wanna check them out?" I'm like, "Well, sure, you know, of course." So we pull over. We're there for about 15 minutes looking off into the desert, and all of a sudden, these balls of light start raising up off the horizon. They'll split. They'll interact with each other. Some of them look like they'd wobble and dance, and then they'd just disappear and blip out. Now, the official scientific explanation has been reflections from reflections from a little country road out in the middle of the desert. Problem with that is these lights have been reported since long before cars existed, and it's dependable. I was out there for 15 minutes and like, oh, there's a plasma ball, you know, rising off the earth. Now, if it's just a ball of plasma caused by some natural earth process, then it seems like that would be a top priority to just understand and categorize at the very least. But I can't find for the life of me any conclusive study or anyone who's gone out there to actually, you know, try and triangulate where these things are and, you know, at the very least, just try to figure out where they're originating from. The other ones that I've seen, there's actually a video on YouTube of another phenomenon known as the Hestelen lights. I think I'm probably butchering that. It's Norway, I believe, spelled Hestdalen. And there's footage of these balls of plasma in daylight acting very strangely. And I asked one of my friends her family lives pretty close to there, and she said she had never heard of it. This is not something they talk about. But there's, you know, I believe there's probably more hot spots like this. And if we could use a method similar to the one that they used in that recent documentary, A Tear in the Sky, where they're actually triangulating their observations, I think that that's invaluable data. I don't know of anything else that we could be doing in light of, you know, big organized governments trying to suppress particular information. But I think that studying balls of plasma is probably the best route we could go to get information that isn't necessarily being suppressed, but it is most certainly still going to lead to some of the same answers for unexplained phenomena. So yeah, I put my 2 cents in for research on the Marfa lights because it is dependable and it represents something similar to what I saw, which in my mind represents new science.
I mean, you're right. You know, like the Marfa lights, it's predictable. It's like clockwork. You can set your clock by it.
Right, and if it's been happening since before there were headlights, then that kind of it immediately calls into question the official explanation. So I just don't like how dismissive people are about things that we could study, you know.
Exactly. It's not just a one-off. It's something they can go there today, you know, and they can spend a bit of time around there, and they, you know, they can fill their boots with data.
I believe that we're starting to witness people taking interest, and you know, man, pretty soon here, it's someone like Elon Musk or someone who has the resources is going to say, you know, I'm interested and I don't care about a contract with anyone. And they're just going to start making what they find out public. I don't like how it seems like there is a paywall for secrets, considering that we all know at this point that Tom DeLonge has access to at least what is being conjectured in closed intelligence gatherings. Like, he's privy to some of that information. There are other people who, because, you know, through credentials or, you know, through friends, they are also privy to these conversations. When any regular person talks to, you know, a loved one about the subject, like, it's not exactly like you can present them with, well, this is what's really going on. I'm constantly in this situation where I'm questioning my own perception of all of this subject. And it's hard for me to say, well, you know, this is what they're debating, you know, behind closed doors, when I know it is. Okay. It doesn't make anyone special to know what's going on behind closed doors. And I feel like that if I were to have, you know, Robert Bigelow money and be willing to throw it at the subject, that all of a sudden I'd end up with a bunch of crap on my lap. It's like, okay, well, what do you want to do with this? We kind of all know that's how it works. So I think this science is going to lead us to better medicine. It'll lead us to weapons where the idea of gun control will be real far from our minds. You know, and I don't mean to be alarmist, but I see the whole thing as futile, because I know that a day is coming where someone might be able to turn some household, you know, throwaway gadgets, you know, microwaves and old TVs into a weapon that, you know, is untraceable, where the bullets, you know, it's waves. So there's no way to trace anything. And I'm certain this technology is already being used, but the fact that it's not something that's on the tip of everyone else's mind, that, okay, this is where we're at, this is what the government's now using, and it's right around the corner for us. Like, if a terrorist can't get guns, but they know how to build something just as bad and strap it to a drone, like, you know, America has a real bad problem right now. And I think it has more to do with our psyche and our rejection from, you know, society at large. It's like people want to punish society back. And I'm concerned that moving into an era with more accessible technology and more accessible science, that, you know, this stuff is going to make things like guns obsolete, and then, you know, we'll have a bigger problem. I think that we're moving towards it. So I would like in the future for these conversations to be about the science that we have figured out and the mysteries that we're still pointing towards. Okay, well, does anyone have any good ideas of how we can explore this? Science should be an open community. And I know that it hurts people out there to have a piece of information that is relevant to scientific pursuit that gets dismissed because it's not accepted science. It's not even an accepted experience that you can have. So hopefully we've moved past that, and we're now into the part where we can start really distinguishing, like, what parts of these experiences are relevant to our pursuits. So, I mean, I think a work like this is great. And I'll, you know, as long as you have a project here, I will support it, sir.
I appreciate that, man. And it's exactly right. An example would be, say, a Bigfoot sighting. Now, you have people which, you know, believe Bigfoots exist. You know, they're just apes that live out in the wilderness and have done for a long time. But those Bigfoot researchers won't accept the fact that there's sometimes lights, strange orbs of lights that are seen that seem to go hand in hand with these Bigfoot sightings. So basically they dismiss all those lights because it doesn't really form their beliefs.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Do you want to hear my grandpa's Bigfoot experience?
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay. This is a story that was told to me by my father, and then my uncle corroborated everything my dad said, and then I was shown a photograph of something, which I'll describe the photograph at the end. But okay, so supposedly my grandpa, he was a drinker, and you know, he kind of had, I guess, a comical relationship with his booze all the way up until it just wasn't comical anymore. But he evidently one night comes home white as a ghost and sits down in his chair. My grandma takes notice to the fact that he's acting strangely. She's like, you know, Richard, what's going on? What's wrong? And he wouldn't talk to her, which was real odd. Normally, he's pretty talkative, according to everyone and everything I remember about him. Next day, she wakes up. He's still in a chair, and he still won't talk. And she gets real worried, so she calls my dad, my uncle, and I think a couple of different family members. Something's really wrong. You know, y'all come over here and talk to him. So they get over there, and they start asking him, you know, what happened last night and this and that. And they finally get him talking. He says, look, he's like, I don't want you to tell his wife, my grandma, I don't want you to tell her about it. Just keep it to yourself. He's like, but he's like, so last night I was drunk. I was coming back home. I was on my way home, coming off of Delaney Road. And he's like, I saw this man parked up in the road about 20 feet ahead of me. It's like, so I got out. It's like I pulled up behind him. He was looking at something in the road. So I pulled up behind him and got out. It's like, it's an old black man who lives on Delaney Road. And so he was stopped and he says, have you ever seen that thing? And my grandpa said he looked up and that there was this big old monkey in the road that had a calf in its arms and was eating out of its stomach. He says that they both stared at it for a second, that it wasn't paying them no mind, that the man who had already pulled over had his headlights on this thing, like up in the road, another 20 or 40 feet. And he said that all of a sudden this thing stopped and looked at him like, you know, he says eye contact, like it looked at them, dropped the calf where it was, and then ran into the woods, right? And he asked the dude, he's like, have you ever seen anything like that? And the dude's like, yeah. He's like, I live around here. I've seen it a couple of times. And my grandpa was like, well, what is it? And the man was like, well, it's rumored that it was something that the government made and they let us get. I don't know what it is, basically. It's just a big monkey. So my grandpa went home, was, you know, feeling ill and dizzy, and he was drunk, and he didn't want to explain any of this while he was drunk, obviously. My grandma didn't like him drinking, so him coming home with a wild story on top of being drunk just wasn't the solution. And basically, my uncle and my dad are hearing this story, and they're like, well, Richard, you know, we could go out there, we could go back out to the site and, you know, see if there's anything there. There's got to be at least a cow there, right? And my grandpa would not go back. He's like, you can go out there, have fun. I'm never driving on that road again. My grandpa was not a scared dude, and he wasn't the type of dude, certainly, if he were scared, to brag about being scared. So this is, like, very unique. And he kept his promise until the day he died. He never drove down that road again. My uncle and my dad went out there, like, approximately to where he described, and they found the calf, and they took a picture of it. And this calf was, the picture shows a pretty twisted carcass or whatever that's relatively fresh, has contents missing, okay? Like, you can tell, it looks like maybe it got hit by a car. And so you think, okay, it, you know, maybe I just got hit by a car. My grandpa was pulling everyone's leg. But with all of the blood trail, there was no like impact. It was just dripping blood like from the side of the road and then back over to the side of the road. So there were no like splashes or impacts or whatever in the blood pattern. So anyways, it kind of corroborated like parts of the story, and I took that like, you know, face value for what it's worth. Like my grandpa, you know, he was a drunk, but he wasn't a liar. He didn't want to tell the story. I never got the story directly from him. I heard him tell someone else the story from another room, and then I got my dad and my uncle to tell me separately, like from their perspective. But that was down here in Texas, in West Texas City, off of Delaney Road, about, that would have been about 50 years ago. I don't know. But according to him, the guy that was in front of him had seen the thing before. So who knows?
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, so that's out of Texas City, is it?
Yes, sir.
So West. Okay, yeah, I think I see it here. So back about 50 years ago, that wouldn't be as built up as it is now.
Correct. And if you look, I don't know if you're looking at a map, see down Delaney Road, there is a mega church going west from I-45. And then past that, it's still pretty wooded. Okay, like you should be moving on Delaney Road from I-45 towards either 646 or Highway 6. I think it's Highway 6. In between there, you should see a pretty significant patch of woods. That's still the same patch of woods. So they haven't done a whole lot with that. You know, I've driven down that road quite a bit, and it always felt kind of spooky to me. But like, you know, I never had any place for that contextually. Like I can't say that I don't believe in it because of that whole scenario. But at the same time, like, you know, I've never seen it. I don't know. That one's pretty freaky. But like my uncle he told me that he thought that he's like, you know, he's like, I think that it's like that Dean Koontz movie Watchers. Like it's like some kind of government experiment. Like they made like a crazy like orangutan serial killer hybrid and then set them loose, or they got loose or something. I'm like, you know, good as an explanation as any. I don't know, but I will say that I've started to put more relevance on the idea of people witnessing strange creatures ever since a lot of this information started coming out about UFOs landing and interacting with people. So I, you know, who knows? I'm still on the fence as to what we're looking at and whether it even represents something that is off world. Like I'm kind of liking the idea of divergent intelligence more and more, like something that is maybe just evolving on a different time scale than us. And that's why a lot of this seems magical. And one of the biggest problems I think a lot of conventional scientists have with the idea of us being visited by aliens is the idea of traveling from one star system or one galaxy to another. It's just, you know, not real logical with what we know about moving through space. But I'm thinking that a lot of the things that make this less likely are purely from our uninformed perspective. So, you know, more information, I think, will most certainly kind of point us in the right direction.
Yeah, it's really ourselves that's holding us back. That, you know, you're right when they think about the whole distance thing, you know, how far they'd have to travel. But they're only going by the science, like you said, we know, the only science that we know.
They're going by our speed limit of light.
Exactly.
And I don't even think we have a good grasp on that. I would say I would like to posit this to anyone who likes thinking about these things, is our creation of dark matter hypothesis. And the whole idea of dark matter is to explain why the stars on the outside of a galaxy don't move the way that we would presume through Newtonian physics that they would move. You know, something closer to the center of mass moves faster, things at the outer move slower. That's Newtonian physics. That's what we know. That's not what we see when we look at galaxies. We see everything moving pretty much at the same rate, right? So we say, okay, there's got to be something there that's causing this to move faster and this to move slower, and therefore it all looks like the same. I believe that we might be suffering from what motion looks like from our perspective in time. Technically, the galaxy is moving in a Newtonian frame of reference, but we're looking at it from one particular perspective in time, which flows at a very constant rate. So, you know, where time is slowing down motion from our perspective and speeding other things up, it appears to us in the middle as though it's all at equilibrium and it's all moving the same speed. It just seems, like a lot of our biggest problems in physics right now are revolving around our understanding of gravity and time. And it seems quite coincidental that these objects that we're observing are exhibiting strange interactions with space, time, and gravity. So, you know, I think we need to steer our research towards understanding time and physics instead of assuming that it's irrelevant and a construct and something we created and that we have to cancel out. Like, we literally come up with formulas to remove time from an equation. So, you know, we insert time and then remove it because it's irrelevant, when it seems to me as though it's almost helping dictate what form energy takes. Like, if you have energy on a particular time scale, we call it magnetic attraction. If you have energy on a different time scale, we might call that gravity, or the snap that occurs when you jump and hit the ground. Now, I would consider that snap to be the same snap that happens when two magnets come together. So, you know, I think that we can come up with a way where we can say all energy is dictated by this one set of parameters and map out what's going on inside atoms, instead of just calling it probability and saying that it represents reality, like actually knowing what's inside an atom. So, I don't know. I do wholeheartedly believe that research into the subject's going to lead to a lot of the answers we've been looking for, and, you know, the more mysterious things we've been experiencing.
I agree. And we're, you know, I believe we're on the cusp, you know, more people are experiencing all these, you know, these strange phenomena all the time. So wonderful, Matthew.
I really appreciate your time, Nick.
You're more than welcome.
You've made this comfortable and easy to talk about, and I really appreciate that.
You got it. Matthew, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Yes, sir. Good times, and I really appreciate it, man. Yes, sir. I appreciate it. You have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Take care, Matthew. I'll talk soon to you.
All right, cheers.
Okay, thank you, brother. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Matthew for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.